This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes, very nice. All right, I hope your day's off to an excellent start. And if that song hasn't started you off properly, then I don't know what will. Maybe some news? Maybe we want to know what's going on in the world?
Yes.
Maybe.
Can we talk about Jeffrey Epstein?
Yes, please, because this is unreal. So a couple of weeks ago, in fact, a couple of months ago already, someone who is usually prone to conspiracy theories and someone who I don't really always believe everything from, right? They kind of throw in some very wacky stuff that I'm not so sure I could ever buy into completely. It makes me feel stupid to listen to it. He said they're going to find Jeffrey Epstein dead in his prison cell before the end of this year.
Who said it?
I'm not going to tell you.
Oh.
Because I don't want to mischaracterize them as a conspiracy theorist, even though I think they are. So the point is that here it is. And I heard the news on what? Friday morning? When did this happen?
It happened on Saturday. Yeah.
And I thought, this is impossibly strange that it should have happened just like this. What the hell is going on in the world? Because
how bizarre.
This is just too convenient for some people, right?
The timing is just
way too convenient. Like, he was about to spill the beans on a whole lot of people.
Just hours before these court documents were revealed.
Absolutely.
To have so many new allegations involving so many new people.
So what's happened? What do we know?
Okay, well, firstly, there are questions around how he died. He was found in...
Hardy-da.
He was found in his jail cell.
Yes.
Unresponsive, was taken to hospital and declared dead. Now, a former jail inmate of the same section that he was in has described how there is no way that Jeffrey Epstein could have killed himself.
Well, they took away all of the stuff that he could have used to kill himself.
That's it. Okay, so this is a special housing unit for high-profile prisoners awaiting trial, like Epstein. Also, he had been on suicide watch.
He attempted to commit suicide.
He was found with bruises around his neck. And it's unclear whether that was caused by an attempted suicide or an attack by another inmate. But he was put under
suicide. But no one's watching any of this.
See,
no one's paying any attention.
Well, they are. They then put him into the special units. But now this is this other inmate who's describing these conditions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He says it's in an impossibility to kill yourself in these units. They're designed specifically for people who are under suicide watch, etc. So between the floor and the ceiling is about 8 or 9 feet. So there's no way for you to connect to anything. You have sheets, but they're paper level. They're not strong enough. He was 200 pounds. It would never happen. When you're on suicide watch, they put you in this white smock, like a straitjacket.
Yeah.
The clothing they give you is a jump-in uniform, if not that. Could he have done it from the bed? No, sir, says this former inmate. There is a steel frame, but you can't move it. There's no light fixture. There are no bars.
This is so
they don't give you
creepy.
Anything in the way that could be create an instrument of death. If you want to write a letter, they give you a rubber pen. Maybe once a week they'll give you a piece of paper. Nothing hard or made of metal. There's a cop at the door about every 9 minutes, whether you're on suicide watch or not.
Yeah.
This guy said he told his parents never to come there because God wasn't in the building.
This is the person speaking on how Jeffrey...
There's no way Jeffrey
can be a
fellow inmate.
Okay.
Correct. He says, it's a horrible place. Some of the guards are on a major power trip. They know the guys there are suffering. If the guards see that a guy is breaking, they're going to help you break.
See, for me, there's just too much that doesn't add up in the story. Things like, so he was he tried to commit suicide earlier, and
allegedly, I don't know if it was maybe an attack from another inmate.
And then turns out he's still not monitored after that.
He is.
And then at one point though, he also had a cellmate, and the cellmate was removed, and there wasn't an official statement as to why that was so.
Well, this former inmate, again, do we trust a former inmate? But he said that they can put two people in a cell, but he said, I'll never believe that this guy had a cellmate. He was too blown up. So he was too, like...
too big a deal. He's too high profile.
Yeah.
Wow.
So let's just let our minds wander for a moment. What do we think happened?
Well, I said Hillary Clinton snuck in a disguise, a really bad disguise.
It has to be someone or some people.
It's a security guard, like this guy said. If the guards see that a guy is breaking, they're going to help you break. They're on a major power trip. So if they saw that he was so desperate to die, they might have given him an implement.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's just too convenient for everybody on the outside that he was about to rat on.
It's horribly frustrating because you don't feel justice when somebody's killed, and that's why the death penalty is questioned so many times. There's not a sense of justice, especially when he wasn't even able to openly hear these new allegations in public, in the court.
Yeah, it was never even tested. This is all very odd.
And at this stage, a whole lot of new people are being brought into this whole mess. George Clooney is now being mentioned.
George Clooney?
What's he
got to do with it?
He's being accused of a sex act with an ex-lover of Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh, wow.
Of course, Prince Andrew is involved in all of this as well.
Yeah, we know about him. Creep.
Yeah, so it's just... the timing is really, really bad.
Mm.
Sure. The plot thickens.
I feel like we're stuck in a Shonda Rhimes drama series right now. It seems so unreal.
I mean, what happens now with these allegations? Do they get to see the light of day? There's no one now to punish, except for his ex-girlfriend who was involved in all of it.
Okay, so the conspiracy theory goes that maybe it wasn't even him who was killed. There was actually a photograph of Anthony Bourdain's autopsy, and maybe it's not even him. It was a double.
They do look alike.
They do look kind of similar. Look, that's the conspiracy stuff that I'm just not going to give a whole lot of credence to. But here's the deal, that if they've already seized all of Epstein's info, and they've already got all of that, and they're now going to go after these people anyway, it doesn't matter that he's not there anymore. They've lost a witness, but that doesn't make the case close.
Because his girlfriend was very much in on it.
Correct. And what's going to happen now is that they're going to go after all these people. So supposedly he had this island. Well, we know he had the island, right? The sex island. And there were all these illicit things that happened there.
Yes.
And what they would do is they would then blackmail politicians and high profile people all over the world to do things for them, whoever they are.
Get them.
You know, so otherwise they'll release the blackmail videos and the rest of it. So I don't know. I mean, this thing just seems very, very suspicious. And don't pretend that it isn't the weirdest story of the year. Even if you don't believe in any of the conspiracy stuff, guy gets arrested, finally.
High profile,
has a lot of friends that we all know.
A lot of money.
The high profile... all many people are bored with normal sex or solicitation
drugs. Talk about yourself here. No.
they want the strange stuff. I mean, these girls were apparently recruited for abuse. They're so rich and have seen it all so much that they're bored and they want the crazy stuff.
So the Federal Bureau of Prisons still hasn't commented publicly about this, but there is already talk around possible criminal prosecution for the guards are meant to be on duty that night, because there are two ways where what the guards did has been wrong. Either if the guards weren't doing the rounds, then that just means they weren't doing their job, and so that is wrong, straight up. The second way they could be wrong is if they were falsifying documents. So if they said, oh no, yeah, we were there and everything appeared to be fine, that's also lying. So that could also be further criminal prosecution. So either way, if you were a guard on duty that night.
Where was Crooked Hillary?
And you know, these guards were also working serious overtime.
Like, where has she gone?
Maybe she sexually lured one of the guards away from the cell.
Because she's so hot.
With her prowess.
With her hugely attractive everything.
To me, this story is jarring for many reasons. But the first and main one is that it's so blatantly obvious that there are sick and twisted things that are happening all around us.
Oh, man. Do you have any idea?
We have no idea.
No.
But clearly, if you have a lot of power, if you are sick and twisted, if you have a lot of money, you can make things like this happen. Someone didn't want Jeffrey around, and Bob's your uncle made it happen.
That's right.
Allegedly.
Or someone helped him commit suicide.
You better say allegedly or they're coming after you
next. Oh, please, y'all just, I'm just going home, locking the door, and I'll be looking at the world through my blinds.
And I mean, all these high-profile people who were involved, they probably had a bit of, part of the thrill was the fact that they could have been caught. But I think that they were probably 90% sure that they wouldn't be caught. Like, there's no ways this stuff will ever surface. And here it is.
You know what will happen in the next couple of days? Where the building where all of the evidence and files
will suddenly catch fire. Watch. This stuff happens. It has a way of happening. And it just, it disturbs me that we live in a world where this kind of stuff does happen. Right? Ay, ay, ay. All right. Anyway, look, there's another huge story that we must pay attention to.
Shucks.
Deborah Cox on SAA. Have we got any more clarity, please?
This is like Deborah Cox has got more airtime in the past couple of days than she has in the past 10 years.
Yeah. So to remind ourselves, she's a Canadian R&B singer, songwriter, actress, and producer.
Who last had a hit in the 90s.
She was a backing singer for Celine Dion.
Oh, wow. Be so dismissive, Sia.
I'm just calling it what it is.
So just to remind you again, had a fiery tirade on Twitter on Monday with SAA, saying SAA didn't care about the safety of its passengers. She was traveling to Washington from Ghana, from Accra, and there were allegations of fires on board. Anyway, what I quite liked was the fact that firstly, there wasn't a fire on board. There was some smoke coming from the air conditioner.
That's not a good sign. I've just got to point out that smoke is coming from the air conditioner, that's usually not good.
Yeah, regardless.
It's not great, but it did start off with a truck damaging the cabin door before takeoff. And that's when the cabin started to fill with smoke. Anyway, I think she said that, you know, she said, oh, I was shaken and SAA is endangering my life.
I think she used the word shook.
Yeah. But shook. What I love is the way South Africans hit back on Twitter. They said they're used to driving in taxis and trains without doors.
Oh,
they just have to hang on so they don't fall out.
I don't want us to be telling the rest of the world this, if you don't mind.
You just focus on getting to where you need to go and you call it a day.
Do we need to be telling people that we have taxis without doors on them?
Can't we keep our
and trains?
Shoes private.
I mean, really? I know that I used to live in Cork Bay and the train that ran through there didn't have doors. You just kind of hopped on and off.
Leanne, how are we learning about this? Who's talking about the state of the plane? Is it in a statement by SAA?
Yes, SAA has come back and they're literally putting out the flames.
Tried to defend themselves.
Yeah.
I don't know what to believe now. It's actually sad that SAA has to go about this.
Well, you don't seem to be very sympathetic, Deborah Cox, here.
She took a dramatic video of an emergency landing.
Yes.
But all that happened really was, and they followed protocol, is passengers were ordered to sit with their heads between their legs until the plane had landed safely. An international flight accident investigator has said that she's found no fault with that.
You know what's funny? I mean, none of this is funny, obviously, because if you end up in a plane where there's a fire or someone damages some of the plane, or that's never funny. That's horrible, right? Mm-hmm. Scary as all hell. None of us want that to happen to us. It is funny that Deborah Cox herself is talking. She doesn't even have people anymore. Oh. She's not famous enough to have people. I mean, that is funny, right?
I actually had to remind myself of some of her songs.
Give us some of those songs. Let's hear some of Deborah Cox's songs. Yeah.
Nobody's Supposed to Be Here, released in 1998 from the album One Wish. Does that ring a bell for anyone?
Nope.
Okay. We Can't Be Friends, released in 1998.
Nope.
Okay. Who Do You Love?
I do remember We Can't Be Friends. Yes, I do remember that. Okay, good.
Who Do You Love from 1995?
Not really.
Okay. Then nothing. Let's just drop
all right.
that in.
Well, yeah, let's leave that one alone. Shame. That didn't go so well for Deborah Cox.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear is right.
I think she needs to release a song now. Something about, you know, looking into the clouds, fire in the clouds.
Yeah.
My love for you is like, yes.
Hey, I've got someone very special to some of the people in our audience pitching up a little bit later on. He's going to come and join us in the studio. Dr. John DeMartini, who's been here before. He helps with personal development, relationships, wealth, education, business, and in this country at this time, we probably need all the assistance and
all
the
of
advice
the above.
That we could get. So,
goodness knows,
Dr. John DeMartini is going to pop by and let us know what he's up to. And also, he's got, I mean, he's produced over 60 CDs, DVDs covering subjects. He's in South Africa four times a year. He's developed these methods over 40 years. We like talking to him. He's a good guy to chat to. Helps fill us in and get us right. Mm. Align us to the things we need to be aligned to.
Reset our compasses.
Damn right. And don't we need that?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Johann Rupert, a billionaire.
Mm.
He got robbed?
Yes. Well, his chain has been robbed of 300 million rand in jewelry.
But he wasn't personally robbed. Milan, don't mislead us here.
I thought it was a plot for like Ocean's 14 movie coming up now.
Yeah. Tell us exactly what happened.
Well, they were
stop goods. With the lying. It's the lying goods. That we can't stand.
They were luxury goods reportedly headed for shops in Sandton.
Okay.
Under the distribution arm of the Rupert family's luxury goods company, Richemont, which owns Cartier and Montblanc, among other brands. Blands.
What's the distribution line called?
Richemont.
There we go.
Richmond.
Under what group?
Richemont.
Cartier.
And?
Montblanc.
Montblanc.
Mont Blanc. Anyway.
Say it properly like you care.
It was 300 fabulous. Million rands worth of watches, diamond necklaces, and earrings snatched at a warehouse in Rivonia after thieves thieves allegedly overpowered and tied up security guards before breaking into a vault on Friday night. Let's remember that this company is owned by South Africa's second richest man, Johann Rupert. He's sitting at billions in balance still.
I'm sure he's okay.
It may be a 300 million rand theft, but
no, it's a big deal.
Okay.
Listen, nobody wants anyone robbed. This is not his personal loss. It's like he was robbed at his house. But this just shows you how brazen criminals have become, right?
For sure.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. Yeah. Like,
I mean, just recently in journalist Peter Du Toit's book, The Stellenbosch Mafia, Rupert was quoted as saying he believes South Africa has reached a point of no return, with the possibility of Deputy President David Mabuza becoming president too close for comfort. He says he's lost faith in the ANC, and the book generally paints Rupert as angry about several things. So this must have just been the last straw for him.
Sure. Okay.
Man. Here's another story about big bucks in the works. So I think it was a couple of weeks ago, we discussed the IVF case of a couple in the US who had IVF. They were pregnant successfully after a couple of rounds. They gave birth to a child, and the child was neither the mother's or the father's because the child came out Asian.
I'm always kind of worried about how that happens.
Mm.
And also,
there's too many little bottles that roll around.
Yeah. Well, this is very confusing. Cecilia, what do you know about this? Has it been established what went wrong?
Well, Not on that story in particular, but you know, human error comes into play in things like this, because here's another story. A family in Ohio in the United States is now suing the fertility clinic, there
use
we go,
your words.
That they used back in 20 years ago when they underwent IVF, because it now turns out the couple had a child, healthy baby, amazing, they've raised the child, but now it turns out the father of the child is not the person's sperm that was actually used in this entire process.
No. That is unbelievable. So whose sperm was it?
They don't know.
How does this happen?
They don't know. This is what makes it even worse and actually sad. The child, her name is being kept secret right now. All we know is Joseph is the father. Well, the father in this case, but is not the sperm donor. Mm. Joseph said that his daughter was gifted a DNA kit for Christmas last year. So it was just meant to be like a nice little gift.
What a gift to give someone.
But a DNA kit, as in to go into one of these ancestry websites find out, like, you know, where do you come from in the world? Yeah. And
you're Apache Indian.
You find out more about yourself in that way.
Right, okay.
The daughter uses the DNA kit, you know, gets information from the father, gets information from the mother. Turns out, yes, she is her mother's child, but she is not
her father's child.
Joseph is not her father.
Poor girl. Imagine that's how you discover it. Oh, it's a present from him.
Mad.
He's like, here, honey, I got you a present. Now you're not mine anymore.
So Joseph and his family are now suing the Institute for Reproductive Health. Christ Hospital Health Network as well.
It's not funny, but you've got to laugh, right?
This is happening so much.
This is just awkward. More awkward when the fertility clinic is now saying, no, sorry, we don't know. They honestly can't trace back 20 years ago to find out who the sperm donor could have been.
Jesus, this is horrible.
And was probably just, you know, the nurses there, bless their hearts, they were minding their own business.
They just got it wrong.
Picked up the wrong wrong vial.
That's what's happened. They picked up the wrong vial.
I think something has to change in this process.
The wrong label on the wrong
jar. All right, so how would you feel if you found out now, at this stage of your life, that your father wasn't your father?
It must be.
I mean, how would you react to that? Sia, imagine you got home and your parents said to you, hey, Sia, it's nice of you to visit us in Durban again. You haven't been for a while. We've kind of got something to tell you.
Oh, no.
What are you going to do? I mean, it's just really, really bizarre.
And I'm trying to figure out, would it hurt the father more or would it hurt the daughter to find out?
Well, they both. It's going to change. I mean, if they love each other, you can carry on being a father and daughter.
Exactly.
I mean, people get adopted all the time.
They have this 20-year history.
But you think you know someone and you think you're related to someone and you think that someone is in your genes. I mean, it's an important part of who most of us are, right?
I think the biggest impact would be the child who now thinks I'm sitting here with some stranger's genes.
And we don't know whose it is.
That explains why I'm the only one in the family who loses my temper sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm the only one in my family who has this kind of eyesight.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah, it explains a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways, I suppose some people would be pleased to know.
Yeah, I don't know how I'd react. Really don't know. It's not, and this is not a situation like your mother had an affair your neighbor's actually your father. Or it's like, oh, well, you know.
That's a little bit worse.
Your mother was in a relationship and then they broke things off and your father
he was a deadbeat and he's gone.
You know, the man who's raised is actually your stepfather, but look at how much he's committed to your life. You know, I think those instances are different. When you don't know who your father is because of someone who just took the wrong petri dish.
Yeah, how do you begin to deal with that? Like, what is your first question?
Or you just accept it and move on because you have a loving family and your father is your father.
Yeah, you're like,
I can identify in a very small percent in this case because
tell me how.
When I was a year old, my parents got divorced. My mom remarried and he adopted me at the age of four.
Mm-hmm.
So I am the only person in the family with somebody else's genes.
Look at you. How does that feel? Is it weird? Or do you just, no,
again,
it's just normal
to you? It explains a lot.
Yeah.
It explains a lot in my behavior. But I'll tell you, the argument between nature and nurture is very strong, because there are certain aspects that I have taken on from my dad, who's adopted me.
Yeah.
That cannot even be medically explained.
Really?
Yeah. So, for instance, I'm...
Really? How strange.
Yeah. I'm nearsighted, and no one genetically related to me is nearsighted.
But he is.
The optometrist who I went to on recommendation of my dad said that our eyes perform the exact same way over our ages.
Yeah, but that could just be fluke.
Well, it could be.
I mean, there are lots of people who are nearsighted.
No, it could be. But then, yeah, just behaviorally, you know, I'm him. I'm not the other. However, when there are deeply seated psychological issues, temper tantrums, that sort of thing, I can relate to the bad genes.
Wow. Oh, by the way, did anyone go to Miss South Africa?
Oh, gosh.
No, I did not.
It's quite a scathing article in the City Press about it all.
Oh, really?
What about?
Yeah, written by Pumlani S. Langa. Miss SA, it's all show, but no substance.
Well, maybe we'll have to talk about that tomorrow, because we're out of time, and Dr. John DeMartini's here. Come and grab a seat, Doc. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah, you're looking as good as ever.
Yeah.
You're keeping happy and healthy?
I'm very grateful and very doing great, yeah.
Good, man. Nice to see you. So let's just reintroduce, in case people don't know, Dr. John DeMartini. He's been a guest on our show a couple of times before. He's considered one of the world's leading authorities on human behavior and personal development. Just the perfect person to talk to get you in the right gear for the start of your week.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing an event in South Africa. Let me just let everybody in on this. It's all taking place on the 13th of August. It's called You Are Not Here to Fit In.
That's tomorrow.
Yes. You're here to stand out. That's what he says. The topic is aimed at getting people to listen to the voice and the vision on the inside, and not just listening to what the world wants you to be and who they want you to behave like. It's pretty relevant in today's society. So, Doc, what's up? You're back in South Africa. Four times a year you come here.
Yes.
Someone asked me the other day, why does John DeMartini keep coming to South Africa?
Well, I've been coming here now going on 15 years.
Yeah.
And we have an office here, and maybe 10, 15 people are working in there. And so I'm very blessed to be able to come back here. I think I love coming back here.
And South Africans love having you here.
They've been treating me very nicely, and I hope to serve them. So
let's just talk quickly about this event that you've got going on tomorrow. What's the idea here? Because I actually think maybe a lot of people should just blend in and not stand out, because actually we do need some people to keep the wheels turning.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people, everyone thinks that they're an individual now, and that, you know, thanks to the internet and cell phones and all the rest, that they can be as individuals they like and start their own business. But that's not true for everybody, right?
No, it isn't for everybody, because somebody has to. You can't have everybody a CEO.
No, exactly.
You have to have each level of society.
Right.
But, you know, even if you're working in a company, there's a way of perceiving what you're doing in a way that you're fulfilling what's meaningful to you. And you have a unique set of priorities and set of values in your life. And giving yourself permission to not negate them, but to live accordingly, and to ask questions that allow you to see how what you're doing is on the way, not in the way. So you can be fulfilled fitting in, but at the same time standing out and allowing your uniqueness. So you don't have to sacrifice yourself. Because so many people have Monday morning blues, Wednesday hump days, thank God it's Fridays, and week friggin' ends. And they're not really inspired, because they want to escape. And they're living for break to break and vacation to vacation and holiday to holiday, instead of actually becoming really engaged and really inspired and productive by asking, how is what's happening to me and how is my job helping me get what is important to me? And then there's also those individuals that are the nonconformist, that are willing to go out and beat to a different drum and blaze a new trail. And we have to have that too.
Yeah.
There has to be a few of those people that are nonconformists, that are square pegs in the round holes.
Right.
The misfits, as Jobs would say. And so you have to be honest with yourself. And there's nothing wrong with either side. But you have to give yourself permission.
There isn't a right or a wrong.
It's not about a right or wrong. It's about what is it really that's going to bring fulfillment? Because your life is going to go by quicker than you think. So, and you have to ask yourself what is really fulfilling.
So, John, what is it with so many people that they settle? They settle for less. And there's a difference, obviously, between settling in a good sense and settling in a bad sense, right? But a lot of people settle for less. They just decide, all right, this is my thing. And they don't ever explore their full potential. They don't ever get into a situation where they're really going to try to do things a different way, live out their maximum, do all these things that you try to get people to realize they can do.
Well, you know, everybody is worthy of love, whatever they decide to do. So I'm not, if somebody chooses to be at home and enjoy a nice dinner and go watch a TV show, that's they're honorable. The question is that there's a yearning inside. When I ask women and men, what are they looking for in a relationship? Mm-hmm. They're looking for somebody that's fit and healthy. It's clean. They're looking mm-hmm. for somebody that it's hopefully intelligent.
Right.
And remembers her name.
No, remotely.
Remembers your name.
You know, that's kind of the important. Bar is.
I'm joking.
Yeah, remembering your name's good. Okay, that's good. Yeah.
And they're also looking for somebody, you know, if a man can speak in terms of your values, the woman thinks she's intelligent. And so if he says you're the most beautiful woman in the world, she knows he's intelligent. I'm joking. But the thing is they want an intelligent guy. They want a guy that is ambitious, mm-hmm. that's not going to have to be a boy that they take care of, somebody that's got resources so they can have a fair exchange. Somebody that loves them, wants to be with them. Somebody mm-hmm. that's socially enough connected where they're not isolated. Somebody that's also inspired by something. They're looking for the best package they can get.
Yeah.
And if we're not offering that package, our opportunities for relationship are
minimal. Right.
So we have to give ourselves permission to expand and yearn. I've never seen anybody get up in the morning and say, I want to be less intelligent. I want to have less fulfillment in my career. I want to have less money, and I want to have an unfulfilling relationship. I want to be isolated and rejected, although there's a guy recently that spent 27 years by himself not seeing another human being.
Look, that has its merits.
Oh. Yeah, but also, you know, I want to make sure I'm sick, and I want to be uninspired. I've never seen anybody get up and want that.
No.
They have a yearning, biologically, to have the greatest advantage to not just survive, but to try to thrive. But some people bang their head against the wall because they are not exposed to maybe strategies, or they're trying to fit in and please people on the outside, trying to conform, and then they don't see that there's opportunities to continue to expand. And then they come into a place where every decision they make is based on what they think will give them the best advantage or disadvantage. And they say, well, being where I am, I know that. I feel safe there. That's more advantage than taking the risk.
And sometimes just fear, right?
They let the basic fears, the fear of not being smart enough, mm-hmm. the fear of failure, the fear of losing money or not making money,
right.
the fear of being not appreciated by some loved one, the fear of rejection by society, the fear of ill health, death, or disease, or the fear of breaking some morals and ethics or some traditional ideal. And this holds people and constrains people sometimes. It's self-constrained, but it's still constrained.
So what do people have to do to break out of that? Because it sounds easier when someone like you says it. To some of us, it's easy for him. He's figured it out. Like, why are so many people trapped in the indecision and in other people's expectations and in fear, frankly?
Well, what's interesting is that if you walk in a mall and you meet somebody and you look at them and you judge them and you think, well, they're more intelligent than me. Mm. And that one's more successful than me. And that person has more money than me. And that person has a more stable relationship and a prettier spouse than me.
Yeah,
and that person over there seems more socially connected and say Facebook, and that person's more physically fit.
And these days there's so much of that, right?
Because, oh yeah, people put on their facades on their social media, and then you have this person's more inspired than me, they're more spiritually aware. And the moment you compare yourself to others instead of comparing your own daily actions to what's really valuable to you, you can compare yourself to them, minimize yourself to them, and exaggerate these people, and that's not what they really are, but you've made that fantasy that they are, and then play small, and then you inject the values of others into your life and confuse the clarity of what you're really up to and lose yourself in the process. And this is the problem of many people in their conformist process, because then they lose themselves trying to fit in instead of standing out. But you don't have to go fit in or stand out. You can find a medium ground where you have your own identity appreciated people and look inside yourself and find out where you stand out in those areas and honor yourself for your uniqueness. Because many people, Einstein said, if you're a cat and you're expecting and comparing yourself to a fish and you're going, man, I can't swim, what's wrong with me? Or a fish, you're comparing yourself with a cat because I can't climb, what's wrong with me? You're not honoring yourself. You're comparing yourself to others and not appreciating what you have as a talent. And it's important to do it.
But what about wealth? Because people think there's some kind of secret to money as well. And there is a secret to money, I suppose, in that it's a means to get things done, and it's an energy thing, and it's value. But it some people think that there's some kind of magic that they're not performing.
Well, money circulates through the economy from those who value it least to those who value it most. And how that works is, if you have a higher value on buying consumables that depreciate in value, every time you get your money, you buy things that go down in value. And if you don't have a value on buying appreciables, which are investments of some form, then it's never going to work for you, and you'll be a slave to money all your life and never have your money begin to work for you. So what your hierarchy of values are, what's really valuable to you, will determine how you spend your money. And if you have it, many people make money, but they don't keep it because they keep buying and putting it in the hands of people that sell them things. And they live vicariously to other people's brands instead of building a brand around their own dreams.
Well, we've covered relationships and we've covered money, but what about education? And in South Africa, that's an issue of some, you know, controversy. There are a lot of people who feel that, you know, they've either haven't got enough of a head start because of education in their own lives, or that they're incapable of helping their kids to get ahead. And without an education, it is a bit of a bleak picture.
Well, I believe that every child has a yearning to learn. I've yet to find one that didn't.
Yes.
But it may not be, they cannot see sometimes the relationship between the classes they're taking and what they want to learn.
Right.
And they'll spontaneously know every single thing on a video game or on a social media. They're brilliant in that area, mm-hmm. but they don't see how those classes. So I believe that it's important for the teacher to communicate with the student, find out what really is valuable to the student, regardless of what it is, not judge it, but to master the art of communicating the information in terms of the child's value so they're engaged like you would do a customer. Because you're in a sales business, actually, as a teacher, to sell ideas to students in their values. And if you can communicate in their values, they become receptive. I had a young boy recently that wanted to climb Mount Everest.
Uh-huh.
And he was 16 years old. And he was saying, I don't need school. None of this is going to help me be a thing. And the headmaster asked me, he said, you know, Dr. DeMartini, I don't really want to lose this student. Is there any way you could talk to him and get him back in school? And I said to the boy, and I said to you, so you're going to Mount Everest? He goes, yeah. And I said, just out of curiosity, how many people do you have in your Sherpa team? And he goes, Sherpa team. I said, well, how many people do you have? You're going to have Sherpas to carry stuff to go up to Mount Everest. So how many do you have? And he goes, I don't have one. I said, you don't have a Sherpa team? Okay. And he goes, no. I said, and if you have a Sherpa, you're going to need a Sherpa team, and you're going to need to know how to speak the language. So are you studying languages right now? And I knew he had a language class. I said, and you're having your teachers help you in the thing, because if you go up there and you can't communicate in the language with the Sherpas, you're not having a team. And I said, and when you go up there, how many days are you going to have for acclimation for your O2 levels and your erythropoietin in your blood? And he goes, I don't know. I said, well, if you go up there and you don't have the sufficient days to go up there, you could die up there. You could have a head swelling and have a hemorrhage. And he goes, oh my God. I said, you need to study some chemistry and make sure you know the chemistry. So I've taking his classes and linking it to him going to Mount Everest. And I took every one of the classes that the teacher told me he was taking that he didn't want to take, and I linked them all to Mount Everest. When he was through, he instead postponed it till he graduated, made sure he had all his teachers helping him get there, and he learned everything he needed to do that and prepared. And now he's back in school again.
Well, you see, I think there's also this idea that people feel you need to have a college degree to get ahead, which is obviously not true either. But what you're pointing out is important, that you have to have a well-rounded education to make it in the world.
Well,
and people tend to take the exceptions and imagine that that's the rule.
Yes, there are many people who do not have a formal education that have done exceptionally well, and without a doubt. But that's, like you say, one in maybe 5,000 that have accomplished that. But overall, there's still a correlation between the levels of education you do and the end-up income and the social positioning that you have. So I think it's wise to see how your classes that you're taking each semester, how it's helping you get to where you want to go. I've gone into schools here in South Africa, and we had a matric rate that was like 27% of the kids were getting matric. Mm-hmm. And we went in there and did a 4-session training process to the teachers, and we linked the positioning of the classes that they were taking and teaching to their values, because that way the teachers are more inspired and engaged to want to deliver the material. And then we went to the students and we linked each of the classes to their values. We first determined their values. It's a process we do.
Okay.
And got them more engaged. And at the end of the year, 97% of those people that took that test passed in that particular control group. So once they see how that the classes are taken or help them get what they want, they're engaged. They want to learn. It's not that they don't want to learn. And when I see teachers that want to label kids, you know, they're lazy, they're this, that's the teacher who's not knowing how to communicate effectively and not inspiring. Because when you have an inspiring teacher, students stick around. I've gone into classes and done classes from 7 in the morning till 7 at night and didn't lose any students the entire day. When you're engaged and inspired, you can keep people's attention and they want to learn. You just have to care and respect them enough to communicate in their values. And when they do, they're thirsty to want to learn.
So no one's stupid.
I don't think they're stupid people. I think those are labels. Whenever somebody has a different set of values than you and you project your values onto them and expect them to be interested in what's high on your value but low on theirs, right, you put a label on them, mm-hmm, and sometimes put them on medication thinking there's something wrong with them instead of honoring their uniqueness. And this is one of the reasons for this class tomorrow night, because that's part of the not fitting in and allowing yourself, because many people will then take the labels that the teachers put on them or the counselors or the therapist, mm-hmm, and say, well, I'm stupid, and they're not stupid. Yeah. They're really brilliant in another area, but they're not honoring that and they're thinking there's something wrong with them. And
I run need that to story. Go back to my maths teacher. I have a few words for her.
She called you stupid?
Dr. DeMartini says, okay.
Doc, I'm interested because we've spoken to you a couple of times. What are the most interesting new things you've discovered? Because you're also one of these people who's constantly learning, and you come here and you share a lot of that stuff. What have you learned recently that really surprised you, that you didn't expect, that you'd kind of thought you'd covered the territory before? You know what I mean?
You know, there's a lot of people that attempt in companies and in countries to impose sort of an artificial, idealistic set of values and rules onto society.
Yeah.
And then expecting everybody to be following that.
Yeah.
And that gives rise to what they call the law of heuristic escalation, that the moment you try to impose a certain ideal onto society, the anti-version surfaces. I'll use example because you don't mind if I use Trump.
No, go on.
Good. I know Donald, so he's a old friend of mine. So Donald basically puts this thing and says, we're now going to put a wall across Mexico, right? And he's going to say, we're going to keep everybody out. And the moment he started doing it, the largest collection of people from Central America and Mexico that decided to go across the wall again are now by the millions coming across the wall. And this is the law of heuristic escalation. The more you try to impose an idealism onto something, the more the equal and opposite system emerges. And this is a classical case of it. And nature has pairs of opposites. And so we sometimes try to create a universal ideal based on an individual's narcissistic projection of their values onto people autocratically.
Okay.
And then expect others to just fit in. And then they end up having punishment rewarding systems, good people and bad people, only because they're imposing something that's not universal. And they're trying to make a universal ideal out of it.
And this is something new you've figured out?
Well, I can't say that it's completely new, but the applications of it I see now in business, corporate, in almost every area of life, relationships, business, corporate, education, spiritual constructs. I see this when I'm in India. I watch the gurus try to impose this, and that's fading now because the gurus used to get away with it. Mm-hmm. And now people are getting too savvy for it.
Right.
And the more educated we are, the more objective we are, and the less gullible we are to monopoled ideas.
And of course, you're reading a lot of this stuff too. So what are you reading at the moment?
Well, right this minute, I'm actually working on a new textbook. You're probably thinking, what's this guy doing this for? But it's actually on solar physics. Hmm. And because really? I'm interested in the relationship between the solar cycle, which is the sunspot cycles, weather, mm-hmm, psychology, what goes on in economics, and also what it does to the evolution of different organisms. Believe it or not, even our microbiome is being affected by it. So I'm right now working on a textbook on that to show the relationship of astronomy to our physiology, to our psychology, to our economics, etc.
We were just recently speaking about the moon's effect on people's moods.
Well, they found out that Venus, Jupiter, the moon, are all causing the solar cycle by their movements. And this is influencing gravitationally and also radiationally. It's affecting our psychology. It's going to affect our entire technology. So all of our satellites and everything else are being affected by it. They're, the economics are being affected by it. So it seems like, well, why would he be studying this?
Yeah.
Well, believe it or not, it's a human behavior study. So yeah. I'm working on a text on that, on the helioseismology, which is a fancy word for what goes on inside the sun and the role we play, because we're actually playing a role in the feedback back to the sun and impacting the sun right now.
I can't believe the sun has any idea we even exist.
Well, we're actually, the recycling of the elements, of all the elements, are recycled through the sun back to the earth and back into the sun of the Milky Way. All those things are actually working in loops, and we do have an influence on that, and it is impacting solar dynamics.
I looked at the sun the other day by mistake, and boy,
it was a bad idea. It had an effect on you, didn't it?
It punished me for at least 10 minutes.
Your eyes can be affected by it.
All right,
don't even look at me.
But you know, what's interesting is that throughout the ages, the sun has been honored by every culture.
Yeah, of course.
So it's life-giving.
Yeah.
So the study of that in life is, Erwin Schrödinger wrote a book in 1955, basically on 44, I mean, on what is life? And you'll realize that our lives depend on those dynamics. Mm-hmm. So as far as I'm concerned, that's part of human behavior.
Well, thanks for popping by this morning, as always. It's good to catch up with you. Good luck with your event tomorrow. I'm sure it'll be sold out, as always, too. And I hope people go along and get what they want.
Well, thank you.
We need a little inspiration in this country at the moment. We've got very little that's inspiring in terms of our leadership, and we need to become the leaders we want to see, right?
Well, you just said it beautifully. If we're not fulfilled in the leadership we have, we can certainly emerge the leadership within and contribute from our part.
Well, thank you very much. Dr. John DeMartini, he is in South Africa, and he's doing an event tomorrow night, the 13th of August, and it's called You Are Not Here to Fit In, You Are Here to Stand Out. If you want to know more, you can always find out more by going to his website. He's produced a ton of material, which you can also check out, his books, his DVDs, CDs, and he's got lots more, which is all available online. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for joining us this morning. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9 o'clock. Have an excellent day in the company of cliffcentral.com. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. Be good. Take care of yourself.
This is cliffcentral.com.